A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch.
The lights probably gone.
So had the stairs.
You are just number six.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 80. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Moonbase 3. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. Yes, we're talking about Moonbase 3, about the challenges of people living in a moon base, dealing with its difficulties and stresses, talking about a series from the 1970s, which was a very hard scientific look at life on the moon. Lots of technically authentic bits of science going on, and lots of issues to discuss about what life would actually be like living on a moon base.
That's right, and that ranged from day-to-day things and interpersonal issues all the way up through political issues and different countries being involved and things like that. It was a BBC series that ran for six 50-minute episodes in 1973. It was actually produced and script edited by Barry Letts and Terence Dix, who at the time were the team that was doing those same jobs on Doctor Who. So there was definitely a tie from one to the other on the production side.
Yeah, very much so. This is the Doctor Who A-team at the time working on a little side project of their own.
Very much so.
So we'll get into the story of Moonbase 3, and the setup is given to us in the first episode, which is called Departure and Arrival. And as you say, Brian, this was produced in 1973, and they set it 30 years in the future in 2003 in a European research station, Moonbase 3, which is one of the five research bases on the moon, we learn.
Yes, and the ideas of how things took place and just worked on this moon base was a big part of the show. It had a somewhat claustrophobic type of feel to it because it was very much contained in the type of way you'd expect an early moon base to be. And it had a sort of tension there, which was quite interesting. And in addition to the internals of the moon base, they also worked with spacesuits and had people going out on the surface of the moon in spacesuits quite a bit. And the way that the series starts in this first episode is with the director, the head of the moon base, being off on a shuttle going back to Earth. And the director and the shuttle pilot are both killed when the pilot suffers a breakdown. And it's in the wake of this that David Calder is flown up to the moon as the new director. And he shows up as this powerful authority figure who starts right as soon as he arrives investigating what happened with this accident and how was it that the previous director could have died in that way, to say nothing of how the shuttle pilot could have died as well.
Yeah, that's right. The first episode deals with this accident and then with Calder's arrival on Moonbase 3 as the new director. And as you say, much of it is then taken up with him investigating the accident and making changes as a result. And from then on, for the rest of the series, he will direct the activities of Moonbase 3. And he'll oversee the various research projects that are going on. But he also deals with the day-to-day incidents. And in particular, one of the issues that they come back to again and again on Moonbase 3, which is the stress that all the staff are under in this rather claustrophobic and difficult environment.
Yes, there are quite a few stories that are based around the staff being under stress and the types of things they do or don't do and how they deal with that. That actually made some interesting plot lines at times.
Yeah, we'll get on to talk about some of those as we go through the six episodes we're going to be discussing.
Absolutely. Now, looking at the characters, David Calder, who we mentioned, played by Donald Houston, was this commanding figure who had definitely a sense of humor, but also a sort of no-nonsense approach. So he was the type of person who would always go directly to work and directly to get to the bottom of things, but with a smile on his face.
Yes, he's a fairly jolly character, but he's also in a way no nonsense and straight to it. He's Welsh, and he's described, I think, in the first episode as a Welsh wizard, because he has a formidable academic record on Earth before being transferred to Moonbase 3.
And the odd time that you see him without any sense of humor, you know that things are quite dire.
Then next up, we have Dr. Michael Lebrun, who is French, because this is a European moon base. He's the deputy director, who perhaps in the first episode and some of the later episodes feels that he should have got Calder's job himself, and that maybe he should have been promoted rather than them bringing in a new director. And Michael Lebrun was played by a very familiar actor, Ralph Bates, who's very familiar from a variety of Hammer horror movies and also from the quite famous British TV series Secret Army. And he did a pretty good job as a plain French.
Yes, something to be desired in the accent from time to time.
Yes,
but not too bad considering. And definitely in the early episodes especially, but the way that he and Calder interact sort of almost starts on the wrong foot, because he makes no secret of the fact that he wants Calder's job and thinks that he should have it. Then we have Dr. Helen Smith, played by Fiona Gaunt. She is a psychiatrist, and she is always dealing with the crew's problems, stresses and strains, the issues of people being contained in this small space and being contained with each other and the friction that results. And that is sort of her area, and she clearly has her work cut out for her, because she is always dealing with those types of things and managing issues with this group of people.
Yeah, she's kept very busy. And then we have one other main character sort of rounding out the central four characters, although there's several other scientists that we encounter in various episodes. But the fourth character is Tom Hill, the director of operations on Moonbase 3. He's a former astronaut, a very successful and famous astronaut, noted for a very famous rescue he took part in when he was younger. And he sort of directs operations in the control room. He's very practical, but he's quite a relaxed character. And Tom Hill was played by another very familiar British TV actor, Barry Lowe, most recognisable to us from Zed Cars, a long-running police show on British TV.
Yes, Tom Hill was like the chief engineer sort of character. He was the one who would roll up his sleeves and keep everything working all the time.
Yeah, very much. He's almost Scotty from Star Trek in a way, isn't he?
There is a little bit of that to him, yes.
Dead as the proverbial. And no wonder, he's been on station for the best part of 8 years. It's just held together by sticky tape and chewing gum.
We've got plenty of that in stores.
Right. Yeah, well, the truth is, Omicron 4 has just about had its day.
Oh, Tom. You know the situation we're in. The Director General's demanding results, and what have we given him so far? Laubenthal, the other two boys killed, partners of fate, Conway's suicide, and a shelved radio astronomy project. Now, let's not have to tell him that something else is up the spout.
All right, I'll try and fix Omicron.
Well, there's no need for you to go. I mean, send one of the others with a technician.
Oh, no. Talking to Dimitri's giving me a hankering. I'll go. Save your technician's time.
All right, very good.
Could you get me a flight plan, please? We've got a nerve, you know.
Huh?
Proposing joint operations with the Russians with hardly €2 to our name.
But get them to participate just once in any project, and I'll shame better appropriations for us from the Assembly.
By demonstrating just how much of a poor relation we are.
Right.
Yeah, but Marsequire will prove that.
Now, getting into our production notes, Barry Letts was an actor who became a director and then a producer. He was the producer on Doctor Who from 1970 to 74, the same years that John Pertwee was the star of Doctor Who. Terence Dix was a writer for The Avengers, and he was a script editor on Doctor Who sort of on and off in about 68 and 69. Some stories he did, some stories he didn't. And then starting in 1970, when Barry Letts took over, Terence Dix became the script editor for Doctor Who consistently from 70 through 74. So for that period of five seasons with John Pertwee as the Doctor, Barry Letts and Terrence Dix were the behind-the-scenes team on Doctor Who, and they had a lot of influence on Doctor Who. If you look at the series, there were lots of elements that were sort of introduced when they were there and continued on, and both of them had involvement with the series. Later on, they were highly involved with Doctor Who both then and later. And it was actually just recently, in the last year or two, that Barry Letts died. In any case, in 1972, the two of them were looking to do another show together, and they were looking for intelligent and realistic science fiction with less of a fantasy element than Doctor Who. And this was a very important point here, was that they wanted something that was less out there than Doctor Who, that was more grounded in reality and closer to the present than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they were inspired partly by the Apollo missions, and they wanted to do something based on the widespread interest in the Apollo project.
Yes, of course, the space program and the Apollo program were huge influences on science fiction on television and elsewhere at that point in time. And they brought the pilot episode script to the BBC head of drama. Six episodes were commissioned. It was actually done as a co-production with ABC television from the US and also with 20th Century Fox. Production was scheduled to take place between series 10 and series 11 of Doctor Who, which was done in such a way that Letts and Dix could continue to work on Doctor Who before and continue on after doing Moonbase 3 as well.
Which was probably very sensible of them, keeping their options open, Brian.
Absolutely.
Yes. When you're on such a runaway success as Doctor Who was in the 70s, you want to stay with that if you can, even if you're doing side projects.
Yes, and that's what they did, of course.
So we've mentioned that this was quite a technically authentic show, or was certainly attempting to be. And to help with this, Letts and Dix hired a technical advisor, a chap called James Burke, who was a very popular and respected science correspondent for the BBC, who had covered the Apollo programme for the BBC and had also produced his own very interesting, very well-remembered science show called Connections. And he acted as technical advisor for Moonbase 3, which was, something that happened with British television in the 60s and the 70s that we've talked about before. We've mentioned it when we talked about Time Slip, and also going all the way back to Fred Hoyle being a scientific advisor on A for Andromeda.
Yes, in the case of A for Andromeda, Fred Hoyle was actually the writer of the show. So it was like you had a scientific advisor built into your team already. But I think by the early 70s, with the space program being such a big part of things, there was a desire to have things that could connect with that and have this greater sense of realism. So it was starting to become more common to bring in these scientific advisors.
So they had James Burke as theirs, and a pretty good job he does of making this all look very authentic and very sort of familiar to us when we compare it to our experience of the Apollo coverage. And then Letts and Dix hired some well-respected TV writers to actually produce the scripts, and they farmed scripts out to some chaps called Arden Winch, John Brayson, and John Lucarotti, who turned in one or two scripts each, I think. I'm not sure how much guidance they were given by Terrence Dix and James Burke, but certainly the idea of stress and strain on the moon base was obviously very prevalent, because they came up with at least three scripts that sort of covered that problem.
And there must have been some communication between the writers there, because there were ideas and to a certain extent even plot threads running from one episode to another. And quite often you would have a character who was a major character in one episode being introduced in the previous episode and things like that. There is definitely a sense of continuity there.
Absolutely. As you say, yes, there were threads running through the six episodes. Two directors, Ken Hannum and Christopher Barry. Christopher Barry is perhaps best known to us because he worked on Doctor Who and would also go on to direct some of The Tripods, a very successful science fiction series from the 80s. And they took the film in to Alien Film Studios to do the exterior shots, or so that's the actual moonwalk sequences, where they have actors bouncing around on a moonscape in slow motion to try and simulate moon gravity. And of course, they've got full space suits, which look very realistic, very similar to the ones we'd seen in Apollo. But I think those spacesuits did cause the actors some problems, Brian.
As spacesuits would.
Yes, there were comments that they were extremely claustrophobic, and also that the ventilation in the suits was very difficult, and that some of the actors had to ask the props people to drill holes in the helmet so they could breathe properly.
I think some of those issues, the claustrophobia, may have added to the performances there, because you had the effect of this tense and claustrophobic feel of it being an unpleasant environment to be in, and that was something that I thought worked pretty well, actually.
Yeah, it does work well, actually. Yes, and you do see the actors looking slightly stressed inside these suits, and the suits were very good. They were obviously very expensive bits of kit to produce for this series, so much so that we know they were actually the BBC kept the suits and they reused them at least twice in two separate Doctor Who serials. So they had to get their money's worth out of them, Brian.
Oh, do you know which serials those were?
It's on the IMDb page. One of them was the Sontaran experiment, I believe.
Yes, that would make sense. Yeah, and that was not that much later, and that they look the same, so that would make sense.
I shall post the other one on the Facebook page.
Okay, fair enough. And in addition to the actors in spacesuits, you also had the BBC model work department doing miniature model work for the shuttle launches and rockets and so forth on the surface of the moon and out in orbit and elsewhere. They did some fairly elaborate things, I think maybe more elaborate for that type of model work than I had seen from the BBC on anything earlier than that. Certainly they did some things that were more sophisticated in later years, but for that time it was reasonably good.
Yeah, it's not bad for 1973 if we look at it with that sort of those eyes. If we look at it now, of course, the models look rather clunky, and perhaps charming is the word.
Yes, I don't think it was quite up to the standards of some of the things that the Gerry Anderson team was doing on the ITV side of things at that point. I think some of the things that were done on UFO, for instance, which was a few years earlier, did look a little slicker.
Yes, I think Gerry Anderson's model team have the edge over Moonbase 3 and the BBC here.
Yes, I think so. But the sequences of the people in spacesuits, I think, were a little more convincing in the tension and the claustrophobia and that sort of thing than you had on UFO and those types of series.
Yeah.
The interiors were done on videotape in BBC studios in the sort of standard setup on set, only with slightly smaller sets in some areas to give that sort of more realistic feel they were looking for.
And as always, we'll mention the music of the show, which was written by Dudley Simpson, another Doctor Who regular who did a lot of music for Doctor Who over the years, and he produced a suitably dramatic theme music to give us the idea that this was a very serious and thoughtful piece of science fiction about life on the moon.
Yes, again, something I think that worked fairly well.
Yeah, it does work well, and it does, you know, it gives us the, as I say, the idea that this is a serious and somber piece of work.
Indeed.
There's a sense of desperation about Stephen Partners these days, as if he feels time is running out.
And so it is.
Something I should know.
I've recommended his transfer back to Earth.
You might have discussed it with me first.
I might, but it's my decision.
There doesn't seem a lot of point in having a psychiatrist if you don't use her.
Point taken.
Why are you getting rid of him?
To begin with, criminal irresponsibility. He made those explosives for Laubenthal.
You gave him an official reprimand.
So I think that brings us to our conclusion for the first half of our Moonbase 3 discussion. Next time, we will talk about the individual stories of the episodes and about some of the science that was on display and some of the reactions to this series.
Plus, we'll do our own reactions, our comments, and our reviews and recommendations, and let you know how you can watch the series yourself if you're interested.
So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much. Join us back here in 2 weeks' time when we'll finish our discussion of Moonbase 3. Until then, this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.